something to believe in.
Good morning. Welcome to the August podcast edition. I'm Steve Roberts, and this is the lovely and better Allie Bills.
I don't think so.
I do, Allie. thanks for joining. Thanks for coming in this morning. Hopefully we have a lot of people on. We have a really good content and really good subject matter to discuss today that's probably going to send us all back and make us think a little bit, which is what these are for.
Absolutely.
It's Do It for Drake and Awareness. And for those of you that don't know what that is, you will by the end of this podcast. So it should be interesting.
I'm very excited to talk about the topic. We'll get into it a little bit further.
Absolutely.
How was your week? How's this last month been?
It's been eventful. There's been a lot of good times. I've seen a lot of different posts, as of you, on the summer hard, and it's nice to hear the people talking about challenges.
Yes.
Putting themselves out there.
Yes.
I think that's great. It's good team building. It's just good to get to know people.
I agree. And the weather is wonderful, especially if you go early morning, late at night. It's been hot during the day.
Yeah.
I will throw out there, though, that those that don't have a challenge yet on calendar, the morning of the 27th, that's a Saturday morning, 2 a.m., we're going to do the Timpanuki hike, which is American Fork side. See the sunrise, climb back down. So we'll start about 2 to 3 a.m.,
yeah.
And that was not my idea. It was one of my team members, Andrea Norton.
Yeah.
And
that's a good one.
Bring a family member, bring a friend, whoever you want. But you will be back down probably 10 or 11 that day.
I think a lot of people, I've seen a few groups work on the hike, or they're going to do the hike. And there's a lot of questions associated with that. And when people hear hike, they think, oh my gosh, am I in good enough shape? And am I able to do this? And the answer is yes. And especially when you're going with multiple people, it's not a matter of how fast you get there or who gets the
quickest. This is not a race.
No.
At all.
This is a working together, pushing each other, talking through difficult things to accomplish a mission. So don't let that worry you.
For sure. And if you can't talk because you can't read, that's okay too. Just walk quietly up the mountain.
Yeah. And I think the important part is, at the end of the day, we're all good enough, right?
Yes.
We don't give ourselves enough credit. And funny enough, I got invited to a little golf tournament in Arizona with my brother, which I would never say no to. And it was probably three nights before. It was very exclusive at his little club there. And he sent me the roster. And I looked down at the roster, and a couple nights before I was departing, and I saw the names of John Rahm, Tony Finau, Brock Osweiler, Golden Tate, Darren Williams. And immediately I went to the, how can I cancel? Because I'm not good enough, and
yeah.
I don't fit in. And so I called my brother that night, and I said, have you looked at this roster? And he goes, no. And I said, well, I think we need to go through it a little bit. And he's like, why? And
we said, need to talk about it.
Yeah, we need to discuss this. And he looked at some of the names, and he's like, so what? And I'm like, well, I don't know that I belong. And he's like, oh, you belong. And I remember getting there for the practice round, and I go up to the driving range, and the guy that walked next to me was John Rahm. And it's funny, when we look at people, we make all these perceptions and what they think they are, or who they are, or how we wouldn't get along with them. And it turned out he was the nicest guy, and we had the best conversation that morning. And that kind of set the tone for me, like, you know what? I may not be at his skill level, but on a personal level, I am good enough.
Absolutely. And they're just normal, everyday people.
They fight the same
battles.
We create
this idea.
Yeah.
Yeah. That they are superheroes in their own right, but they are going through the same everyday struggles and battles.
I did make the mistake of cornering Brock Osweiler. For those of you who don't know, he played quarterback for the Broncos. Big guy, 6'8", super cool. I after the practice round, went up to him and I said, you're getting kind of old. I mean, he's still young. And I said,
I can see Steve.
Yeah. I just, I was in one of those moods, and maybe it was just an icebreaker. And I said, can you even still throw a football? And he goes, well, why don't you go up there and find out? So I stepped out about 20 yards and he rifled one. It pretty much knocked the wind out of me.
I would say.
But the pride in me kicked up, but I'm thinking, oh my God, I can't breathe. But yeah, he has a cannon.
Still.
Yeah, still. Oh yeah.
Okay, those guys can throw it hard though.
Oh, it's unbelievable. Puts it in perspective.
For sure.
But it was a great event. There was a lot of very influential people. And you know what I learned at the end of the day is it's okay.
You're enough.
Yeah.
You're good enough.
That was enough. I actually was fun. I thought they had fun. I had fun. It was great conversations. And it was really, really good for me to experience that.
Well, it's interesting you bring that up because I had a similar experience. I was in Connecticut. And I just can't express enough gratitude for the type of people that Jesse Itzler and Sarah Blakely, she started Spanx and recently just sold it. The quality of people they are, you put them on this pedestal and then you meet them, you realize they're everyday people, but now they're on a higher pedestal.
I don't think people understand who Jesse is. I mean, Jesse is like a legend to me.
He is a legend.
Because I read the book, Living with a Seal.
Yeah.
And I'm so envious that you got to hang out with him because what he went through was like, wow.
Well, and he's just better in person. You know, they could do so much with their life and they just choose to share it with everyone around there and give back. So this event was actually a charity event that we all chose a charity and that we were passionate about. And they gave $1,000 to 100 charities. But we had to climb a hill in their backyard in Connecticut 100 times. Oh. And I share this story because,
Allie,
you know, there's who's who of sports and
yeah,
people there.
For sure.
But Kyle Korver was climbing the mountain and he was there with his 8 or 9 year old little boy, Knox. And there were a lot of touching moments and just people fighting through. I mean, I don't care how big the hill is, 100 times, you're just counting to 100 takes time. So walking it, I was like, I could do this in tens. Next thing you know, I just did 3. I still had 97 more. So the event was long, required some grit. It was hot. It was humid. And like some of these guys are not little. They're Clydesdales climbing this mountain. But Kyle's little boy kind of beat him to the 100 and gets to the top and rings the bell and has his wristband. And Kyle gets to the top.
Did he beat you too?
The little boy. Absolutely. Yes.
Oh, youth is good.
Oh, isn't it great? But Kyle gets to the top and his little boy's waiting with his medal to put around his dad's neck and kisses him on the forehead. And, you know, those are the moments. Doesn't matter what Kyle's accomplished in the past. If you hear him talk about his son, no matter what anyone thinks of him, the fact his son looks up to him is enough for him, you know. And
how they had the PPP loans.
Isn't that amazing, though? I would think
he did any of that.
Guy was a heck of a three-point shooter, in very good condition, very good shape. You picture this athlete playing 80 games a season, right? That's hard on your body. But his 8-year-old beat him.
Yeah, and was still running up and down the hill while we were all hiking after that. But I mean, obviously no ego involved. It was for a good cause. But, you know, the point being that sometimes we just care so much about what other people think or who other people are. And in the end, we're all just people. And we just need to feel good about who we are. Surround ourselves with great people to push us. But we're enough. Just who we are.
It's amazing. We get so worked up about that. We miss. Sometimes it's easy to miss the result.
For sure.
And the result and the reward.
Yeah.
And that's a great story. So, I want to hear more about that.
I'll be sure to tell you. But so you are enough. Exactly the way you are.
Absolutely.
Well, I think we should get into the most important part of our podcast today.
Take it away.
And I'm just super grateful. I think this is a topic that it's almost taboo. We don't talk about a lot because of fear of it being a sensitive and very fragile topic. If people are super vulnerable, especially, you know, in the world we live in today. But it's so important to talk about. And we have some special guests with us today. Joining us today, we have Sheena, fellow InterCAP member, and Sammy, her sister. And they are so kind to participate and to help shed light a little bit on this trial that we all face and either know about through personal experience in family or a friend or somewhat removed, but with trauma, with suicide, with how to respond to the trials in our life. And to start, I think it's best to just have Sammy share her story. We'll have some questions for her after. But this is a very powerful story.
Yeah.
And I have just gained in a very short amount of time in knowing Sammy so much respect who she is, but also her courage and her willingness to share this story in order to save or bless another life. And not everyone in her shoes would be able to do what she's doing. So, Sammy, thank you so much for being here.
You're welcome.
And if you want to just share a little bit about your story and who you are, your family, we'll have some questions for you as well.
Your Kyle story made me cry.
It's okay, we got you.
Yep, and you cry about the Kyle, and then we'll cry about your story, okay?
Yeah. Because we'll cry with you.
Because I'm tired of crying about my story.
It's okay. It's okay.
Oh, eventually it'll get easier. For those of you who don't know me, my name is Sammy Hardman. My son is Drake Hardman. On February 10th, 2022, he took his life. And a result of being bullied by one kid. It always changes when I try to talk about him, because I could do it for hours. But Drake loved everybody. If you looked up empathy, if you looked up love in a dictionary, like his picture is there. He's what you would, I mean, he had a million friends. And the hard part about it is you see kids and you see people who, to us, we think, oh, they're so popular, oh, they have all these friends and all this, but you don't know the internal battle.
Yeah.
That one person can cause.
You think it's, I think your message there is really strong, because honestly, at the end of the day, you're right. It only takes one. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's easy for us as people to, instead of getting to know somebody, we sometimes pull back and feel threatened by them.
I mean, I'm the parent that I have never sheltered my kids from anything.
Right.
I've worked in a lot of things as pertained with law enforcement. And so I've always shown my kids literally the world how it is. And I navigate them, and I help them to navigate through situations, and I talk them through them. And by doing so, it's gave them an understanding of different walks of life and different people and different situations and family situations and stuff that are out there. And I know a lot of people parent different, and right. Just because of the way I parented doesn't mean that somebody else parents
right,
wrong.
Right.
But I think as parents, when we don't teach our kids kindness and we don't teach them empathy, or something I was guilty with is sometimes like bringing work home. Mm-hmm. Our kids read into that. If you come home and you're speaking negatively about people, and you're maybe a coworker or a boss or even in a sports team, our kids, they hear all this negativity, and so they start to take it in.
Right.
And their only outlet is maybe school or maybe a sports team.
Mm-hmm.
And in turn, instead of being able to talk to us about it, because maybe we don't allow them that comforting feeling to be able to open up and talk to us about things, that it's used as an outlet,
yeah,
to other kids and to other people.
And I think, I mean, I'm quite a bit older. I won't get into that. Maybe that's another podcast. But, you know, I remember growing up, we all have days, right?
Mm-hmm.
And as a kid, it's really hard to compartmentalize those days. And the message was always said, well, what do you have to be stressed about? What do you have to be?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you have a roof over your head. You don't have any bills. You get to come and go. What stresses do you have? Steve, grow up. You know what?
Mm-hmm.
You're fine. That's what, my parents were great, but that's the message in my home.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we as parents, we as people, when somebody expresses that or we see a glimmer of that, I think it's at least now as me, as a parent, I try to ask more questions. I try to be more conscientious. I try to be more aware. And it's hard. You're in a tough position.
Yeah, it's very much being open to asking the questions and being more open to receiving the answers.
Right.
A lot of times it's the answers that we don't want to hear.
Right.
Because it's the truth. It's the pain that's coming from our kids. And as parents, sometimes you don't want to hear it because your first thought is to either put up your defense and be like, yeah, no, you know, and or to get mad at them or denial or a lot of it is just like it comes back as you start to think like, well, if my kid's feeling like this, then what did I do as a parent to fail them?
But, it becomes
very personal.
But that's hard because mm-hmm. as a parent, you can't put a Cabela's tent around your kid and walk them everywhere, right?
Correct.
You have to trust society. You have mm-hmm. to trust that you're doing the very best, and I'm very certain you were.
Mm-hmm.
But I think for me, the message is for all of us is that, hey, we don't need to cast stones at people. We don't need to know if somebody's having a bad day, instead of, you know, calling them out or picking on them,
mm-hmm.
why don't we put our arm around them? Why don't we say, hey, you know what? I got you. It's okay. Mm-hmm. You know, and we get caught up in our everyday lives sometimes and we almost get selfish to a point.
Yeah.
And we think of ourselves instead of others. And
Sammy, you mentioned something that I think is to go deeper into. I think it's safe to say that most people that take their lives, they actually don't want to die. They want relief from whatever's going on in their life, whether it's bullying,
mm-hmm.
whether it is expectations they can't meet, loneliness,
feeling insufficient,
all of these things that we've all experienced on some level.
For sure.
Mm-hmm.
But you said it's important for parents to ask questions and be willing to hear the answers. What are some of those questions that you think are good as a parent, even looking back, that you did do well and that you might have now learned more about in your current situation?
So
that's a great question.
It is a very good question. And with my parenting and with my kids is, so my oldest daughter, when she was in seventh grade, was getting bullied by some girls at church really bad. To the point where there was some really unkind, inappropriate things that was said to her. And she started cutting, and she was cutting her legs. So usually kids at first, sometimes they'll cut their arms or stuff like that, but she didn't want us to find it. She didn't want me to be mad. She didn't want me to know what was going on. And then we had gone swimming and I had noticed. And so, and the first thing is in my mind was like, what the heck? Like, why would you do this? And that was my first learning experience on how you do this. And, I took her into her pediatrician and we talked to her. And, later when I got home, I sat her down and I had those hard conversations. Like, and it was the first time ever having to sit down and ask your kid, why are you sad? What caused this? Would you ever take your life? Would you,
those aren't comfortable conversations.
They're not comfortable conversations. And
they're awkward
for her. She already suffered with some anxiety and depression issues that we were already aware of. And so her answers back to me were hard. She was sad, and there were times where she felt like she couldn't go on anymore. And so when you hear that as a first, for the first time, it's gut-wrenching, and it sucks.
Mm-hmm.
And so you, at that point, you know, you hug her and you love her and you tell her that it's okay. And then as my other kids grow up, you become more conscious, and you become more, but then in turn, my middle daughter has a very chameleon personality, and not so much anymore. But when she was in junior high, she was a mean girl. She was that girl that would hang out with girls, and she would take on the personalities of kind of how they were. And so she would be mean to these other kids. And so then it's a conversation where I have to have a conversation with my kid because she's a bully. And it's almost like when you have that conversation, you have to move it into to make them see it. They have to see it before they can realize kind of what's going on.
Right.
And a lot of what pulled Michelle out of that was Drake. So Drake had no like unkind anything in his being. He handed Pokemon cards out to homeless people just because at that point, like, they knew that somebody wanted to be their friend.
Right. So,
and so,
oh, sorry, go ahead.
No, and so with Drake, he was always a happy kid growing up, and last summer is when he really started to trigger anxiety. And it hit him hard, and it hit him fast. We recognized the signs. Unfortunately for him, it became almost like it was taking over his life. And he it was debilitating to him. Like he just couldn't function. And so we took him in and got him on some medication that really helped him feel better that way. But he would almost have like these panic attacks and stuff like that. And I think a lot of it was triggered when it was the school's getting ready to start. And the bullying stuff kind of started the previous school year.
Oh,
and so it's getting into a new year. And so I think a lot of the anticipation and stuff and the school year went on and the bullying stuff we dealt with as it came.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a situation. So the week of everything happening with Drake, that Monday he had gotten punched in the face in the bathroom. And he came up with an elaborate story because he wanted to protect this kid, this bully that had hit him. And I have a 140-pound puppy. And that was his reasoning for the black eye. He's like, I was wrestling with Carl and he got me with his paw. Okay. So that's when my husband had asked him, and I got home from work on Monday and asked him the same thing. I'm like, dude, what happened to your face? And same story. It didn't change. Nothing changed. My middle daughter had taken him to basketball on Tuesday and I was off Tuesday. And she took him to basketball and those two had this relationship that he told her everything. And he told her on the way to basketball that he had gotten punched in the face in the bathroom. And he made her promise not to tell me. And so when she got home, everything was, you know, we just kind of went about our day. And later that night, she called me into her room and she was crying and she was upset. And she had told me what had happened. And she said that she was worried about Drake. And so Tuesday the 8th, I pulled Drake into the couch and I had the hard conversation with him. And I asked him if he was sad and that he knew that he could talk to us about anything. And I asked if he had any thoughts about hurting himself or hurting others.
Yeah.
And he looked at me with a look of disgust. Like, I would never.
How dare you?
Like, why would you think that I would be depressed? Why do you think I would take my life? Why do you think all these whys? And so I said, okay. We all went to bed. Everything was fine. The next morning I got up, pried him out of bed, and he fell asleep on the couch where he always falls asleep. And for some reason I had taken a picture of him on the couch. And just so happened to be the last picture I ever took. But we went about our day. He went to school. He came home from school. My husband said he was a little quiet. Nothing like completely out of the norm. I was at work, and I got a phone call from my husband about 9, 8:30, and told me that they had just found Drake.
That's hard. You're brave for sharing that story. I know it's not easy.
It just shows that you can have the hard conversations.
Yeah, and you just
never, and you don't see it.
You don't know.
You know, Sammy, you shared something with us. You know, Sweet Drake, he started getting bullied because he actually stepped in to protect a friend that was being bullied, and then he became the target. And
which often happens.
It happens a lot, and I think you either get bullied or you protect yourself by becoming a bully sometimes. And to have those conversations with two different children about both sides of it is really important. I mean, the heartache if you knew that your child was the cause of anything like this, mm-hmm. you know, first of all. But you learned something when your pediatrician came to your house. Can you share that about Drake? Because when you asked him about if he'd ever take his life, and he looked at you like that's not a thought he'd ever had, mm-hmm. there's a reason why, right? Like, that wasn't planned out. This is not something he considered.
So suicide with kids is considered an impulse.
And what ages mainly?
Ages between 10 and 14. What happens is their brains don't understand the concept of planning something out. They don't write letters. They don't say their goodbyes. They don't anything. It's something that it happens.
It's a trigger.
It's a trigger, and it's a 30-second thought that if the opportunity presents itself within that 30 seconds, it's all they have. And it's at that point, if there was maybe something that could have happened a minute later, it would be gone, and they wouldn't have done it. But
And so much with the anxiety that the kids are dealing mm-hmm. with, and he got hit so quickly mm-hmm. with anxiety, and in large part because of maybe some bullying that he had faced ending a school year and now starting a new year, and what was that going to look like? But, you know, knowing that about your child, and that you can have these conversations, but that a situation can trigger them to be impulsive in that way, mm-hmm. it just heightens our awareness even more as to knowing what's going on in our kids' lives. And without being the helicopter parent, while also saying it's okay when my kids do have certain needs and struggles.
I think as parents, we have to look at it that if your kid struggles with anxiety, if your kid struggles with depression, they have social issues, they have social anxiety, stuff like that. I think we have to look at that and help them navigate through that and learn how to process that. Because if we don't, and we tell them, you're fine, get over it, and we fill them full of those thoughts, that as they grow up as adults, they don't know how to process those emotions. And the world that our kids are having to grow up in right now is obviously nothing compared to what any of us grew up in. And it's a scary place.
I know that something, and I encourage everybody, I know we're going to go a little longer today, but I encourage you to hang with us because the messaging at the end is very, very important. So I know if you have something to do, hey, an extra 10 minutes, I want you to stick around. But the question I have because it's so uncomfortable for me. And even when I sat down here with you today, and these are questions, these are all raw questions. We didn't plan these on Allie. We kind of were kind of off the cuff. But as an outsider, right, as a bystander, hearing your story and doing that, you made a comment that you lost some friends along the way. And you didn't lose them because they didn't like you. I think you might have lost them because they were uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. What can I do as a person hearing your story to give you comfort? To what would you like me? How would you like me to behave? Is it okay for me to say, hey, I know what happened. I'm very sorry. If you ever need somebody to talk to, I'm here. What does that look like in your shoes for advice for me?
And what's that stigma you talked about, you know,
yes.
of being
Does that make sense?
The mom.
It's awkward because we've all experienced it, not to your extent,
right.
but
right.
at some extent. And it's just, it's uncomfortable.
I mean, at some point in everybody's life, they're going to deal with trauma.
Yeah.
Like a trauma of some sort is going to hit. I think I made a post about it. Grieving is a double-edged sword. And when you lose somebody, and it can bring the most amazing people. I can't even tell you the blessings in disguise that we've received, and the people that it's brought into our lives, and I can get into that further in a minute. But it also takes the people who are closest to you, your best friends, your even some of your family, and they don't know how to process your sad.
Yeah.
And so they don't.
They avoid it.
They avoid it, and they pull themselves away. And so, and it does. It leaves you feeling as me. It leaves me feeling empty, because at that point I'm trying to
keep it together. Yeah.
Which I don't do very well.
And for everybody else, not just for yourself.
Yeah.
You know, you've got other children involved.
And so you try to process your own emotions.
Mm-hmm.
And try to figure out, like, okay, how do I deal this with all of this and still hold it together so that I can be their friend or that they want to talk to me. And it's like they worry that your sad is contagious.
Yeah.
Is really what it is.
Yeah.
And they...
I think that's a great way to put it.
And they don't know how to process it for you.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't.
They peel away.
And they don't want to experience that depth of grief.
It's like they worry that it's going to rub off.
Or it's going to happen to them.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's the conversations that a lot of times I'll tell people that, like, I'm still me. Like, I'm still the same sarcastic person I was before everything happened. I carry a lot more.
Right.
And so to me, it's people who come up to me and have normal conversations.
Right.
How's it going? How's your day? And I know sometimes
you're saying don't be awkward.
It's hard. It's easy for me to say, but it's hard for outsiders to be like,
sure.
But I don't know how. And Sheena's dealt with this as well. We unfortunately had two that. Big tragedies that hit us within 6 weeks of each other. My cousin and her family had passed away in a car accident the end of December. And it took all three of them. And so we as a family were still trying to process that. And just that trauma alone kind of made people pull away.
Yeah.
And so, and then everything, when it hits with Drake, it's like, and then you the last little, like, lingers that you think that you have kind of go.
Right.
And so they say that when you're grieving and it gets the hardest when things get quiet.
Yep.
There's a lot of support at the beginning too, and then it dies down.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know, you never want someone to not grieve in the way they need to grieve and work through it and to put on a happy face in order to just be presentable to friends and family. And you want people to really work through the necessary steps. You have this strength, this ability to now become an advocate so quickly. This was February of 2022. To be an advocate and to be a voice in a way that a lot of moms or parents or family members don't ever get to.
Mm-hmm.
What would be, you know, your what's something that helped you to make that turn and getting through that process, which, you know, is ongoing, obviously. Mm-hmm. But to be where you are right now is probably hard in a lot of ways and super healing in other ways. Mm-hmm. But it's so commendable, too, because that voice needs to be heard.
Yeah.
You've saved lives, as you have mentioned, just in sharing your story. You know, you receive that feedback. It's powerful.
We have. I've gotten a lot of a lot better messages than good messages than I have bad. Lucky for me, I haven't received a lot of the negativity that social media and the internet can bring to your life. But it really is. It's a stigma that you don't want to be placed with. And you don't realize how many people hide and hold back from it until you've gone through it. And then you start to learn. I've met hundreds of families that have lost kids to suicide all over the world. And they didn't want to be labeled as that family. They didn't want to be labeled as the family that lost their kid to suicide. Because ultimately, when you lose somebody to suicide, it's the hardest way to lose somebody because you have the questions. No matter how much you know your kid loved you. And I mean, Drake knew how fiercely loved he was.
So you, there's a lot of different things, a lot of different roads you as a parent, as a human being could go down after a tragedy, mm-hmm. right? You've chosen to do something about it.
Yeah.
Which I commend you for. What is that? Is it the Do It For Drake? Let's get that out there, because I think that's a good, solid thing that people need to know that people need to know about.
Yeah, we
want to get into how it started.
We started the Do It For Drake the day Drake passed. We were in the hospital. Drake had already passed. Our girls were there with us, and we were just kind of. Laying there with him, the girls were putting glue on his hands to make handprints, and we just got talking about stories, and my daughters were like, well, we're just going to keep doing it, like, we're going to do it for Drake, we'll teach kindness, and from there, it kind of just, I hashtagged it on my post when I put my initial post out there, and it blew up. And so we started the Do It For Drake Foundation. And with our foundation, it's being able to provide stability and resources and help to kids who need it. And when I say that, I don't just mean on a bullying issue as being a victim, because when you look at the situation, they're both victims.
Right.
The bully is just as much a victim as the bully, like the bully.
Yeah.
We've heard the term hurt people.
Yeah.
That's the reasoning.
So what can people do from my chair, from Allie's chair as a general public, what are you doing that we can participate in or we can help with?
We have so many things that we're kind of trying to juggle right now. As far as we started a co-foundation with another foundation back east in New Jersey, actually. They're called Bill With Love. And we tag teamed with them and developed what's called Bags Against Bullies. And for those who don't know the cornhole world, it is a huge world.
I like cornhole.
It is insane. And we did some fundraisers with them, and we partnered up with, it's called Empathy Rocks. Mm-hmm. And what they do is they provide empathy boxes. And these boxes, they supply one classroom for 30 students for 8 months, and it teaches them empathy. And so this company, they sell them. So that's where Bags Against Bullies was born. And so with Bags Against Bullies, we made backpacks. And on these backpacks, my girls, her son, Camden, and our friends, their three boys, the other charity, they chose just a bunch of kind words. I wish I would have brought one. And we placed them on a backpack.
That's great.
And then a pull bag. And that's our goal, is to get these backpacks into schools. My girls rocked them last year as a senior and a junior in high school.
That's awesome.
And it makes it so it's, how hard is it to be mean to somebody who's wearing a backpack with so many kind words?
Right.
I love that.
That's a really cool thing.
And we also, that's one of the things, one of the big things we're doing. And then we partnered with a foundation in California called the Background Foundation. And the Do It For Drake Foundation and the Background Foundation are, as we put them together, the powerful meaning behind it is because Presley Aronson, who started the Background Foundation, he was bullied as a kid. He went to school at with a bunch of famous celebrity kids at a private school in California, and they bullied the crap out of him.
Right.
To the point where he didn't want to live anymore. He didn't want to go to school anymore. He just didn't want to be here. But he pushed through it, and now he owns his, at 14 years old, he started his own production company. And in California, and he runs the Background Foundation, and he wrote a song called The Background. I recommend listening to it. It is the most powerful song you will ever listen to, and it's his life. So he reached out to us and wanted to co-partner on putting together a music festival, because with our foundations, it shows that you can make it. Like, you can push through, and you can be better, and you can stand up to people, and you can succeed, and you can still be here and know you're worth it.
So there is a concert coming out, correct?
Yes.
August 27th?
August 27th.
And it's welcome. Everybody's welcome.
Everybody's welcome. All ages.
The proceeds go to help this great cause? I mean, is that how it works, or where can people that are listening, what can they do to help?
So Brock had sent out an email, Brock and Kimber, last week, with the link to purchase tickets. We kind of just want it to be a night, you know, a night for people to come and
be happy
and love whoever's there. And the artists that are coming, I believe, are actually writing a song that will be sang there for the first time. And so we want the whole company to come, of course. The email Brock sent out has the ticket link. And then for anybody who's not able to come, we are also accepting donations. Donations will go straight into the foundation.
Well, where do they go for the donations?
Yeah, so the donations, the link's also in Brock's email as well. Okay. We can send that out again. I know Kimber was going to send out a follow-up email.
Yep.
The donations are going to go straight to the foundation, and it's going to help fund the concert. And then Intercap is also a sponsor of the concert, and I know they're matching donations up to $10,000.
Okay, that's great.
So
I got to tell you, Sheena, I love your shirt. It says "Do It For Drake." I love the bottom that says "You Matter," and I think that's a great message for everybody that joined us this morning. Is, you know what, you do in fact matter, and remember that when you're thinking crazy stuff or having one of those days, or somebody says something that sets you back a little bit, you know what? It's okay. You matter. Mm-hmm. So I really like the shirts. I applaud you both for coming in here. God bless you both. I know this has got to be very, very difficult. The fact that you're able to get out in front and still carry on and live through is powerful.
I have a lot of help.
I'm sure you do, but you know what?
I tell him all the time, I'm like, you know, his heart was way bigger than mine. And so when all of this happened, I was like, bud, you could have thrown this at me like in fives,
yeah.
But you threw the whole world at me. and so I'm going to need you to navigate it. And
and you're going to need us, right?
Yes.
We all need each other at the end of the day.
We do. And to go back on your advice, I guess that I'm not one that likes to give grieving advice because everybody grieves in different ways. But the thing that has helped me to be able to help my girls in the grieving process is to feel the emotions. I mean, obviously therapy helps to be able to talk to somebody, but every day is different for me. Right. Like I will have days where I can laugh about everything, or I can think about everything, and I can talk everything about Drake. And then I can have the next day, it's to the point where it's like anything I see or do just makes me cry.
Right.
And so it's feeling those. You have to feel those.
It's okay to
those bad days. If I don't smile all day, I don't smile. Yeah. I cry, I scream, I get mad, and I might think probably things that I shouldn't think, not like on a hurting me level, but like on an angry mom level.
Yep.
But I allow them and I process them, and then I start over the next day, and I'm like, okay, what's today gonna bring? And every day is different. And so for any grieving anybody, that's, if I could give advice, or if I ever gave advice, that's what it is to feel it, to feel every part of it.
It's okay not to be okay.
The more you can heal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, we certainly thank you for sharing your story.
Thank you.
And do it for Drake. Again, we'll get the email out to everybody again, but keep on, girl, both of you.
Just there's no question.
Keep on.
This sweet boy felt so loved in this life and is still feeling that today.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
And you're an incredible mother.
Mm-hmm.
And aunt. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
So I know we went on a little long today, and I think everybody that's with us can see why. Very powerful. I don't want to bring the mood down on everybody. We just wanted to make everybody aware. We wanted to get it out in the open, and we wanted to discuss it. With that, I don't want to take away from the positivity of the challenge, the positivity of you and each other. I want us to stay focused and know that we do matter to one another. Do you have some parting thoughts? Oh, wise one.
No, I was just going to say that as you learn through other people's trials, we can take so much away in how it can help us in our everyday life, no matter what we're going through. I think it's so important to feel. I think it's so important to ask questions to the person sitting next to you.
Absolutely.
To have hard conversations if you feel like there is a struggle, if you know they have any anxieties or any type of grief or depression, then have some conversations that
don't
might
take it for granted.
In that moment, just save them.
Yes.
In some way.
Yep.
And just know that you're loved, know that you're enough, know that you matter, and continue to surround yourself with superheroes like we have right here.
Absolutely. In closing, next month's podcast will be in St. George. We will be coming at you from the Bluffs over there. We're having a grand opening at our new location in St. George, so we felt compelled to just go ahead and have the podcast in St. George. There was one other topic I was going to say. Oh, if you have any feedback, we welcome it. We haven't had as much as I would like to. We've had some good feedback, but anything good, bad, or indifferent, podcast at intercaplending.com. We welcome it. If there's a topic or you personally would like to come on the show, we would love that too. So with that, we bid you farewell, say thank you, have a great weekend. And a great month, and we'll see you in September.
See you later.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Give me something to believe in. Take it. Give me something to believe in.